Radio. The transmission and reception of electromagnetic waves on radio frequency, especially those carrying sound messages, or the activity or industry of broadcasting sound programs to the public. Fanboy. A male fan, especially one who behaves in an obsessive or overexcited way.
This is the Radio Fanboy Podcast, and here's your host, Bevo.
Today's guests, I met many years ago at Triple M in Brisbane. He was known as Jerry Maguire because he had quite a thing for sport. Years later, I crossed paths with him again at WSFM as the sports guy. And these days, he finds himself at Wave FM in Wollongong. Please welcome Travis Weeks. How are you, mate?
More. Bevo, how are you? I was about to say morning, but I suppose with podcasts, it doesn't matter what time of the day is, does it?
Well, people then find out when we actually recorded this. So, well, good morning,
that's
mate.
That's true. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, and we'll say good night a little bit later on.
Absolutely. You just finished your brekkie shift there at the Wave in Wollongong. How's things going there?
Well, it's all about sharks in the Gong at the moment because a few days back we had a whale carcass wash up near Bulleye Beach, and it sent a number of sharks into a feeding frenzy. There was tiger sharks. There was a great white that measured about 4 metres, and the carcass was in a pretty tricky spot for council to remove. But they got rid of that, and the sharks certainly put on a show. But yesterday, the DPI's people collected a couple of tiger sharks that stuck in nets, and they were found dead. They were like 3.8 metres, and they actually untangled another one that was 3.2 metres. They found it alive and released it on its merry way. But we've certainly got some sharks circling around the Illawarra at the moment.
Yeah, they need a feed by the sounds of it.
They do, hopefully not on us.
That's right. So your beginnings in radio was sport-based, wasn't it, Trav?
It was. I got my chance at the M's in Brisbane because, Bevo, I'd done a lot of work experience with the Seven Sport crew in Brisbane. And, you know, I used to pepper them to go and hang out with them every weekend, and I'd scroll through videotapes and write, you know, short 15-second VOs for them that sometimes the newsreader read them and sometimes they got put in the delete bin. But Rod Tiley, who was one of the main men at the M's back in those days, and we're talking, you know, around early 2000s, they were looking for a weekend sports guy because Quinny, who was Quinny the sports guy, he'd moved into the brekkie producing role there at the M's, and they wanted someone else to come in. And Mr. T had asked the guys at Seven, and they threw my name up, and I got thrown in the deep end, and it was sink or swim. And I think I did a bit of doggy paddle, but that's where I learned to cut my teeth, because I did do university and I have a journalism degree, although I can't spell.
Yeah.
And, you know, whilst that does help you, and it's important to have that because some people look at it, I reckon out of all of the subjects I did at uni, probably only 25% of them have meant something to me as my career's gone on.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's pretty impressive way to get into radio, though. Like, you know, getting through Channel 7 and helping out there, and then the radio thing kind of eventuated. The nickname Jerry Maguire, who awarded you that name, Trav?
A person from Triple M that I didn't like at the time because I was Travis Winks. Not that I didn't like that person, I just didn't like that decision. And I got a bit smart about it because I reckon I'd been there for a good year or so and I'd been Travis Winks.
Yep.
And I suppose when you're starting out, you want to try and build your name up. That's part and parcel of the game. That's it. Not that I'm big on branding, but when you get your name changed to Jerry Maguire, I got called into the office and they told me that. And I said, well, if you want to change my name to Jerry Maguire, how about you show me the money? And that was not received that well. It was essentially take the name or pack your bags and go. And, you know, as a struggling university student that ended up actually mopping floors and cleaning ovens at a little deli quickie mart, after I left the M's, I basically just shut up and put up. But you know what? In hindsight, whilst it was a shame to lose my identity as far as my name goes, that opportunity, it did open me up to some shots on the breakfast show there with the late great Sammy Power.
Yes.
And Dean Miller, and
yes.
And they had Jerry Maguire out on the streets, and I wore a honking suit and did some stupid things, and used to have Sammy in my ear telling me what to do, and I'd basically have to mimic what she was saying and embarrass the hell out of people, which was great fun, but that took me out of my comfort zone. And whilst I wasn't overly happy about the Jerry Maguire name, it stuck, and I stayed there until I eventually departed. And then as I moved on with my career, I reverted back to Travis Winks. But now I'm just called Trav.
It's like
they've cut part of my first name off and my last name.
Well, that's the Australian way, isn't it? You've got to find the less syllables possible to give someone a nickname.
Well, it's better than Tool, isn't it?
So, Winksy, we cross paths again.
There's
in
another
Sydney.
One.
Yes.
Winksy.
Yeah,
that's what I had at high school. Yeah. Ipswich Grammar.
That's what Quinny used to call you, Winksy.
Yes, yes.
And then we cross paths again in Sydney at WSFM. You got hired as the sports guy down there as well.
Mm. Yeah, and that was, that was an opportunity that came out of the blue, because I left Triple M in not so good circumstances. I was basically told, we're going to let you go, it'll be the best thing that'll happen to you in your career. And at the time, you don't believe that, because you're like, well, where am I going to buy me 2-minute noodles from now? How am I going to afford that? How am I going to be able to put a few litres of petrol in my Ford Festiva 2-door? And I was unemployed there for a bit, and I did a bit of work in that quickie mart just to keep the dollars flying in. But on the side, and again, this was a great opportunity that I had thanks to Triple M, that was doing some ground announcing. See, because when you get into radio, as you know, Bevo, you're not just doing what you're hired to do. There's always offshoots, hosting events and all sorts of things. So I got to do some emceeing, and back in those days, I did the emceeing for the Brisbane Strikers, which were, they're now the Brisbane Roar, essentially, in the A-League, but that's the old NSL. And I was also one of the ground announcers for Queensland Cricket at the Gabba. So sometimes I'd get to be the ground announcer during a test match or a one-dayer, but more so for the Queensland Bulls for their one-dayers and their Sheffield Shield matches. And I was there working at the M's as well when I got that opportunity doing cricket updates there, thanks to Sunny Queen Eggs, Crack Another Egg on the Barbie this summer. That was my credit line. I'll never forget.
Oh, I remember that now. Yeah, it's coming back to me.
yeah. Oh, it's all coming back to me, absolutely. And I was sitting at the Gabba one day doing some work, just ground announcing, and my phone rang. And, you know, that's not really good when you're watching live cricket, because a wicket will fall and then you've got to get on the loudspeaker and bring the crowd up to date. And it was a fella called Graham Edwards, who had not long been appointed the content director at WS in Sydney. And, you know, again, this is, you know, it's not what you know, it's who you know, because Sammy Power had not long before joined what was known in those days as Mix 106.5 on Breakfast There.
Yep.
And she had tossed my name up to him, and he rang me and said, hey, look, we want to get you down. We're looking for a sports guy. We want to get you down, give you a bit of a trial, see how you go. Would you be interested? And I went, absolutely. And he's like, well, can you get on a plane tomorrow? And I pretty much did. And I went there, you know, just expecting to sit down and have a bit of a chat and write a few scripts and, you know, lay my voice down for them. And the next morning, they had me writing and delivering the sports news alongside Glenn Daniel, who's an absolute legend of a bloke. And they wouldn't let me go. They just said, that's it. You've got the job. So I had to do a mad dash back to Brisbane to get some stuff. And I shacked up with Sammy for, would have been a good 6 or 8 weeks while I found a place, and it was a whirlwind. But what a wonderful, wonderful moment in time to, you know, have been at the M's in Brisbane, get cut, not know what you're going to be doing next, and then all of a sudden you have this wonderful opportunity presented to you by such a great organisation and such a wonderful brand.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, both you, me and Sammy both worked at Triple M in Brisbane, and it was good to cross paths again in Sydney.
Maybe we owe, you know, if Sammy was still around today, maybe we owe her a few drinks, because she probably was working as like seek.com.au for us.
She's very generous like that. I remember her very, very well. And of course, we crossed paths later again in the Sunshine Coast when she came up for that. So How did you end up in Wollongong? What was the transition from Sydney to Wollongong?
Well, while I was in Sydney, I got another opportunity. And you know what? Some people will say I got hit up the backside by a rainbow. And maybe there was a bit of that. But I worked my butt off in Sydney. I went real hard there to try and learn as much as I could and, progress my career. And one day, out of the blue, a bit like the Graham Edwards call at the Gabba, I got a call from a fella called John Davies who was working for ESPN. And he asked me if I'd be interested in potentially working in the US.
Oh, yes, I forgot about this, yes.
And you know, hosting a sports show for ESPN on television called SportsCenter, which is their flagship news program. And I was kind of like, are you taking the piss or what? And it was a funny day because I remember that day it was busy at WS and I was heading off to the grand final breakfast at the old Western Hotel near Martin Place. And I took this phone call and then I was like severely distracted and I had to do the NRL grand final breakfast. And then from there I was going home to get some stuff and then I was flying to Melbourne for the Sydney Swans West Coast grand final because I was covering the grand final parade on the Friday and then the GF on the Saturday and then I was back to do the NRL grand final. So it was just crazy times. But in between all of that, somehow I need to dummy up like a little on-screen demo with the handycam that when I went back to my house to get some stuff to fly to Melbourne, I jotted out some scripts on a bit of butcher's paper and got him to shoot that on the handycam and I put that in the post on my way to the airport. And yeah, before I knew it, a few days after that NRL grand final, they had booked flights for me to fly to Connecticut in the US to do a screen test at ESPN. Like, I was like, are you kidding me? Yeah. This can't be true. And it was business class tickets. Yeah. It was phenomenal.
Absolutely incredible. Yeah, I totally forgot about the ESPN ventures. You lost quite a bit of weight, I remember, when you went over there as well, didn't you? What was your dieting secret or your training secret?
Well, I drank the American low-carb beer.
Oh, yeah.
So that was one thing. But, you know, the great thing about ESPN, they have so many wonderful presenters and analysts, and they don't care what you look like. They don't care if you're 50 kilos overweight. I mean, they do care about your health and well-being, but they don't care what you look like. They don't care if you're bald. They don't care if you've got facial hair. Just back to the grand finals. 2005, it was the Tigers and Cowboys.
Yeah.
And in 2006, it was the Broncos and the Storm, and the Bronx won 15-8. There you go.
Yeah,
so
nice.
But I did exercise because I knew I had more cushion for pushing. And, you know, I didn't want to have like five chins whilst I had my tie on set. So I did a lot of walking and they had a gym there at ESPN for staff and it was like fully kitted up. So not every day, but pretty much every second day I'd go and get on the elliptical machine and sweat it out and get on the boxing bag and lift some very light weights, just some cardio stuff. But over time, like over the space of a few months and cutting a bit of crap out of my diet and drinking that wonderful Bud Light or Michelob Ultra, I ended up losing about 20 kilos over about 3 or 4 months. So, you know, it took a bit of dedication, but slow and steady wins the race. And I've since, Bevo, done that a few times now. I've done it again recently from October last year to now, and I've slowed up because I don't want to really lose any more weight, but I've lost 20 kilos because I seem to get to this point where I live life pretty large and end up pretty large and get to that sort of 105 mark and I've scaled it back to 85. So,
good on you, mate. Well done.
Yeah, so it is possible. You know, you can drop some kilos, but it doesn't happen overnight.
Yes. So we found out about the ESPN adventure overseas and you finally made your way back to Australian radio. I think you teamed up with Sammy at some stage, didn't you?
I didn't. Sammy.
Again.
Sammy again. Like, seriously, that woman, when we cross paths again high above at the pearly gates, I do owe her. And she knew that. Like, her and I spoke a lot. We probably didn't talk enough towards the back end of her time here in our world because our lives kind of went in different directions. But we were very tired over the years and she's the type of person that, you know, if she was still with us and you ran into her, you would end up having a wonderful time, and she'd take you in and look after you and smother you with love as only Sammy could. Like, she loved the cats more than anyone else. But yep. But she I would say she got me the gig here, 100%. Oh, so awesome. I got thrust into hosting a breakfast show with Sammy, which I was so nervous about. Like, because I admired her and I looked up to her so much, and I loved her sense of humour and thought she was an extremely clever woman. She wasn't everyone's taste.
Yeah.
But it was such a privilege to do a show with her every day, and she was so funny because, like, we were tight, okay, and we spent a lot of time together, and, you know, like, she'd walk in here to Wave FM and I'd already be here half an hour, 45 minutes before her. And I'd be like, "Hey, Sam, morning, how are you?" And she's like, "Do not talk to me until you get into the studio and open the show." She was just like that. She didn't want to be disrupted by people in the morning. For a woman who made a wonderful career in breakfast radio, she was not a morning person. No. She was far from it. She should have been doing a night show somewhere. But, Sammy probably got me the job here at Wave as well.
Yeah, so you and Sammy were on air for how long?
Oh, it would have been 12 months,
okay.
12 months. And then she opted to go back to Brisbane. And that's where the hot shoe shuffle started here at Wave. And I had a few different co-hosts over many years until I eventually moved out of the breakfast show full time and moved into news, which has just been sensational.
Did you ever see yourself being a newsreader?
No, not news specific, sport, yes, because when I first made the change into news here, I mean, writing a news story is like writing a sports story.
Yeah,
okay?
I guess it is,
with sport, I knew sport.
Yep.
Well, at least I think I know sport. So I had to basically tell myself that I can do it. I had to re-believe in myself. And, you know, it probably... I was out of my comfort zone doing news because there's some serious stories. There's a lot of political stories. There's a lot of crime. And, you know, you've got to make sure you throw your allegedlies in there. Once they're charged, it's allegedly.
Yeah.
It was a bit of a change, but I really enjoy news reading. I love communicating and I love trying to be on top of things as best I can.
Yeah.
You know, we got 300,000 or so people that live here in the Illawarra. And, it's a great community and there's lots to talk about and lots of things happen here. Probably too much crime. But I think that that's just the world that we live in these days. But news is great. And also the online aspect of it. I do, and again, I'm a bad speller. I have terrible grammar. At university, I did a subject called punctuation, spelling and grammar. And I used to run into my lecturer of that particular subject at the Royal Exchange Hotel at Toowong almost every Thursday night. And I would buy him a jug of beer with the few dollars and cents that I had.
Yeah.
And somehow he gave me a 4 in that subject. Now, if you get a 1, you're not going real well. 7's the best. And my motto used to be 4s and 3s get degrees. Well, he basically gifted me a 4 because when I write online articles now, like, I seriously Google check and spell check the most simple words. And it's somewhat embarrassing. But I don't make a secret of the fact that I think that I'm the world's greatest speller. Like, I put it out there that I'm terrible.
Yeah.
You know, you might get the odd typo, but I love that online aspect and taking photos around the place and then using the social media that we have because that is so powerful. Like, I can write a news story on our website and you will get some traction, but the moment you link it over to our station Facebook page, it'll go gangbusters.
Yeah.
And it just shows you the power of Facebook.
Yeah, it's absolutely incredible. It's certainly changed the media landscape. In such a short time.
Yeah, well, I get stories. You get stories from Facebook all the time. Like, if I was teaching a future journalism student, I'd be like, you need to know how to search on social media. You need to know what to look for because you get so much news from Facebook and from Instagram and
Twitter. Absolutely. Couldn't agree more. So these days you've become an author there, Trav.
Yeah. I didn't deliberately set out to become an author, Bevo. My family went through a very, very dark period in the back end of 2016 and It started with my brother having a prescription drug overdose, and a few weeks later, my sister, who'd been in a violent relationship for many years, she reached her breaking point and did some pretty silly things, and ended up in very serious trouble with the law, jailed. And my father, who was the glue of our family, the rock, loving man, intelligent man, retired, he just, I think, ran out of answers and was broken by it all, and he broke down as well and ended up in a standoff with police on my family's property, and he had a gun and the police shot him dead. So my family was, as the book is titled, shattered. We self-destructed over a 67-day period. So I somehow I got through that. I got through it with my wife, Amanda, who's a brilliant, remarkable human being. But we had to keep the rest of the family together, and we had to try and get my sister through her legal problems and try and rehabilitate my brother. Unfortunately, my brother lost his battle with depression in mid-2018, and the day that I found out about his death, I started typing away on the keyboard, and I thought, you know, after that 67-day period settled down, and it took many, many, many months after that to settle down a little bit, I thought that it would make one hell of a story one day, but that was just the journalist in me. But the day I found out about my brother Trent losing his battle, I was very angry, and I started typing. I didn't have a plan. I wrote a bit of a prelude and smacked out the first chapter. And those three, my brother, my sister, and my father, all had very unique situations that ended up with them all being at the same place at the one time. I had my brother and I at my dad's funeral, and my sister there with armed guards in handcuffs because she got day release from prison, and she left there in the back of the prison van to go back to the slammer, and Dad left in the back of the hearse to go and get cremated, and Trent left not knowing what his future would hold, but unfortunately he lost his battle. So that's why I started writing the story, and as I wrote it, Bevo, I didn't think about, you know, it seeing the light of day, but as I progressed through each chapter, I thought, you know what, people might get something out of this. It's a brutally true, gut-wrenching, heartbreaking story. And unfortunately, there's too many people that we meet that suffer from mental illness or are victims of domestic violence or have pretty crap things going on in their lives. So I thought maybe people might relate to parts of it. I hope not all of it, because I really hope no other family anywhere ever has to go through what mine did. I didn't write it for pity. I wrote it and I released it because I hope that people that read it will look at their lives, look at their choices, look at their relationships differently, because emotive choices and decisions and poor decisions backfire great, and the ripple effect, the impacts of those choices go beyond where even your mind can take you. So it's been a journey. It's out now and it's being well received, although a lot of people are sending me messages saying that they go through a lot of tissues and a lot of toilet paper when they read it, and it has that effect, because I put it all out there, and maybe I've opened it up too much, maybe I've been too personal, but I just hope that people who suffer from mental illness or domestic violence actually accept help or recognise that they need help. That's the first battle. I don't have a magic formula. There's no super potion to try and fix these problems, but talking and realising and, I don't know, understanding the philosophy that for every action there's a consequence is probably a good start.
It must have been quite therapeutic getting all those thoughts and feelings and everything out of your head onto paper. Did you find it was a good experience doing that? Is in like, you know, your own therapy?
Yeah, it was, Bevo, because during that 67 days, I mean, there was no real grief to be had until Dad lost his life. But post that, there was all the legalities with my sister and trying to help my brother and make sure that my mum was okay and my other sister, and then, you know, all the other people involved, grandchildren, and, you know, and making sure that my wife was okay, and she was the one that made sure I was okay because she's a gem. But it was my cathartic release because I didn't get a chance to grieve for a very, very long time. In fact, I don't think I did until after my brother died, and that's why I was angry. That's when I had the major release. Like, my wife Amanda made sure that I got some professional help in the weeks after Dad's passing, and that was so important. That was with the employer that she had at the time. They had that EAP set up that a lot of employers nowadays have. Grant broadcasters have it, and I would encourage anyone whose place of business uses EAP. I don't know whatever others are out there, but you know, like, your family members can use it too, like your immediate family, and it's just a wonderful thing that, you know, it shows that organisations do care and you can get professional help, because that definitely helped me. But again, I still couldn't grieve because it was so complicated and my family had ended up in a complicated mess. So it took until mid-2018 for me to grieve, and I grieved by typing away on the keyboard and shedding a lot of tears and having my wife give me lots of hugs and lots of love. And mate, I've taken her to hell and back too, because it's been a drain on her, and she's a very strong woman.
And she's still there by your side, isn't she?
She is. And I've put it all out there, and she's incredible. A lot more private than me. She's a lot more private than me, and that's probably the difference between us, because she encouraged me to write the book. I don't know if she really thought that people would have so much interest in it, and we'd see it on the bookshelf at Dimmicks or at QBD. But anyway, we'll deal with that, because there is some good to come from it, and we don't want anyone else to have to endure what we've gone through. Hopefully people can realise that life is worth fighting for, you know. Even when my family was imploding, I still had Amanda and our children, you know. That there's more than enough there to keep you busy.
Yeah.
And, you know, we've got another bub on the way in November, so that's sensational. That's puts a smile on my face and warms my heart, and we're very excited about that.
Oh, congratulations. And
thank you.
All the best with the book Shattered. What an incredible story. My goodness, it was just, sounds like a snowball effect, one thing after the other, and you're still here to tell the tale, mate.
Yeah, when shit goes wrong, Bevo, shit can go really wrong. And my family definitely proved that. I wish I never felt compelled to write it. I wish that none of the things that happened ever happened. But unfortunately, they did. And we'll never forget them or those times. But we've got to move forward and look at the positives in life, because there are plenty of them.
Absolutely. Travis Winks from Wave FM, thanks for joining us on the Radio Fanboy podcast.
Thank you, Bevo.
The Radio Fanboy podcast, hosted by Bevo and produced by Matt Fulton Productions. Dan Hill speaking.